The last paper for the day, and so the honor goes to Amy.
Is that the concept of materiality is not being applied as well as it could be. And we've had a number of reasons for this. For example, the way some standards are drafted, including materiality guidance in IS1 is unclear. And we've heard about kind of behaviour of some phases of the financial reporting process. For example, some preparers adopting a better place and sorry approach, or some preparers auditors using a checklist approach to disclosure. So we've got a couple of projects on the which are addressing some of the problems we've heard of materiality. One of those is about making and clarifying amendments to IS1 and some of those are the materiality paragraph in IS1. The other project is an assessment of the existing materiality guidance to consider whether additional guidance is needed, perhaps education material or application guidance. And that project is in its early stages. We're currently working on developing a list of practical issues that should be considered in this project. And we're planning on taking a case of the ISD course one next year, which will start to scope that project. And so the question we've got for you is on page 4. In order to help us identify the scope of that materiality project, do you have any practical examples of when you've had an issue applying the concept of materiality?
Bob, but not going to be too responsive to the question when we get to that. Maybe Alan might be able to get some help. I haven't been involved with DIA with the integrated reporting lately. But they're trying to come up with a materiality paper. And at times I just think you're chasing your tail. I'm just not sure there's much more you can do. And that's the perception of little I've been involved with that one. I'm not as involved as I have been in a while. If you have any updates to your thought as maybe an outside person looking at what they're trying to do. I had one specific comment is, you know, when you look at the whole basis of information, if something's material, this is not going to be too articulate. In the guidance they have in IS1, it says individually or collectively. And I'm wondering if we should be looking more collectively, kind of the opposite way that you're thinking about things, but looking at the collective body of information and whether something's material. I'm not sure there's much there. But kind of with my comment, I'd be very interested in hearing Alan's thoughts on what IARC is doing. I'm really not sure there's much more you can do in this area, quite frankly, but I could be wrong.
Okay. So these are my comments. And I've been involved in the technical task force and working group on materiality, and it's been a real struggle, to be honest. I think I agree with you, Bob. There's not a lot you can do about materiality. I mentioned this morning when we were here about the cases in the US, and I think the Supreme Court Act case is quite helpful. There are some very similar cases. Very little analysis being done at a high level. US and New Zealand of all places are the two most common. And the New Zealand cases are very similar. And materiality is about identifying whether or not the target audience, which are the investors, whoever it is, would have made a different decision or had wanted different mix of information. And if they would have made a different decision or a different question, then that information. And in order to do that, usually I think it is that you have to have in mind who your audience is, and that's the most that and the time of decision they're being asked to make are the two most important things. And that's where in the integrated reporting front, it's very, very important that they identify what the purpose of an integrated report is and how it's different from a financial report. And I think the reason it's very important is that if we have an accessible definition of materiality, and we have very, very similar objectives, and that is an integrated report supposed to be helping an investor make decisions about providing resources for them. Then arguably, an integrated report, which they have in mind, is sort of a 20-30 page nice summary, if that what material are there, then surely all the financial information that goes underneath it, if you've got the same definition of materiality and the same objectives, that all has to be in the integrated report as well, which completely is not an objective. I'll use an analogy which I've used before, and I don't know whether it's a really good one or not. But let's say that, you know, Bob, we're trying to set your lifestyle. Have you got a balanced work with a home lifestyle? And I might ask questions about how often you play golf or how often you do other things like that. So if I sort of had I'm not going to say balanced scorecard, but essentially an overview of how often, how many hours you have at work, how many hours on social, golf, and so on, that might give me a sense of asking whether or not you've got a work home lifestyle. So if I want to find out about your golf game, I need all the scorecards, because that will tell me how good you are at golf, for example. And I think that's the difference between financial reporting, materiality objectives, and something like integrated reporting. So the two things that I think are the key to this are, one, being very specific about who you're talking to. And in our framework, we actually talk about, I don't know, not informed investors. You know, it's a knowledgeable and diligent, it's something. You're talking about somebody who might think that you deep down. So anything that lowers the maturity threshold slightly, because these people are going around, ferreting around, looking for information. So I think it's a slightly lower threshold for more information. But they're also quite intelligent people who are quite well informed about accounting. But you also need to understand what the decision is, because you look at all the Supreme Court cases and the other cases, it's all in the context of the type of person that they've got in mind and the type of decision they have to make. And so I actually think that most of our work is going to be about clarifying those concerns, absolutely clear objectives. And I absolutely take on board your point about individual versus collective, because the risk we've got at the moment is that you go into an accounting standard, let's say a 5% on share-based payments, and if that's the focus, you go deep down and assess materiality in the context of that, that's like going down my golf in the forecast. The financial statements aren't necessarily about making sure you understand everything about that, every aspect of the business. We've got to have a maturity threshold that says, I've got sufficient information to make investment decisions. I understand overall what the risk is that I'm getting into. So I'm not sure that we're not going to come up with, and we've never discovered this, and set thresholds of 5% or 10%, some metric. It's about the clarity of the objectives. And we take from the security regulators to be very, very careful, because if you develop rules, then people will use rules not to disclose what they consider as good principles that will actually help them use that as a tool to challenge people if they don't think it's against what they're preaching. Long interpretation, but it's a little bit tricky issue.
One thing I want to say, the way the question is teed up, Amy, that there could be some reluctance to say to the public. So if that is the case, and if you do have something that you would like to share with Christian, Amy, and of course Alan, please let them know so that you don't need to disclose here, because the question is very specific. Have you encountered, so it might bring some tension. It's Richard in the room as an auditor.
So, we just ignore him anyway.
So with that, I will give it to Olivia, then to Kevin.
I asked myself a question about the information that has to be given on the standard itself, because the regulators say you more than explain what the standard says, you explain how you apply the standard. Okay, but when I read financial statements of other groups, if they apply the gap, I am not completely aware about it, so I look at the notes to know how they register that type of, for example, for R&D, for research and development. I know that we have not the same standards, and we have different ways of registering. So I think that it's difficult to say. I will not say anything about the main principle of the standard, because for two reasons. Because someone that is reading my statement needs to know what the IFRS asks me to do first, because if he reads the same financial statement from a US GAAP group, he should know that it is different. And also because the standard may change, and if I, for example, say, refer to IFRS type to see which is, what is the principle. If someone look at the financial statement 2 years before, and if the summer has changed between the 2 years, there is not historical registration of IFRS standard. So he will read something that is not in accordance with that what has been done 2 years before. So I think that there is a question there. Is it possible to highlight information on the principles? I'm not sure.
Is it that to highlight in the accounting policy, or is it more broad?
For example, if I suppose that people should know, because they are knowledgeable people, that in IFRS the research expenses are in charges and the development expenses are in assets. If you respect some conditions, should I support it and not make any word about it? But is really any people reading financial statements obliged to know it, or may it help some people to read it? So in fact, does I have users when I read that explain it or not?
I think that's one thing when you're thinking of looking at part of the media project is the specific question about accounting policies and what extent is what we have in there, or many companies have in there, which is quite extensive, is that always needed? And I think that's sort of definitely a subset within or part of the scope that we would look to do. And I think it goes back to Alice's point about who is the user and what sort of knowledge do we attribute to them.
And in the time, because you have made this financial statement of 2 years before. So,
okay, can I just add something though? This is for me to understand. Are you guys getting what is the aim of this project? Is it a quick fix or is it a long term project?
It's in a short term project, right? I wouldn't call it a quick fix.
But it's short term.
It's something that we want to start. We want to commence as quickly as possible, so we want to bring something to the board by the first quarter next year. We've classified the short term, but it's not going to be a short term as these IF1 and then the supplementation. Even though there is some discussion about materiality there, I mean.
But the reason I'm asking is that from this discussion, are you getting that this is something we can grapple in a short term project? What is the sense on that? Because I think I just want to make sure that you're getting the feedback that you want to get. To some extent, my feeling is that the discussion is tending to be high level. Is this the right level, or is there something we need to, this group needs to provide you in a more concerted fashion?
I mean, we were hoping to get some sense of some of the practical issues that people are facing regarding materiality. I know in the discussion forum that we had and in the survey, the application of materiality was raised consistently by respondents as being one of the issues and one of the causes of disclosure overload. In discussing the concept of materiality in the conceptual framework, the board was happy that that concept was clear, but felt that there were some issues regarding its application. So in sort of starting to scope the document on materiality, we wanted to make sure that that would cover some of the issues that people would hear at a high level, issues that people are facing. Now, in the sense people aren't facing those issues, that some of these things are aligned with what we've heard, and then we start to think, well, what can we do to address those issues?
I think I'll give Malcolm a chance then to tell us.
I mean, if you ask for some practical example, I think back over the recent discussion I've had with our legal team. The legal disclosures we make on cases, or disclosures we might make about, still we have to make about related party disclosures, if one has any. But they, quite often, the lawyers would have a lot higher threshold for materiality than we would have in financial. And sometimes they can challenge things. So, especially in disclosure legal cases, they would tend to have, they would think about
more generic statements?
Yeah, they would tend to have a lot higher threshold. They would say, well, what's the impact on the market capitalization or something like this? context of impact on share price movements and things like that, and they would not be so specific to the financial statement. So there have been, you know, you asked about the cases, so I think it's having a lower threshold, and we're just pushing for more disclosures, and the lawyers are pushing back to know why. They tend to have a higher materiality.
And I think that's come across situations where there's a legal definition behind why we determine materiality, but also the term significant, and then it sort of applies.
And, you know, when you get into it, we've just done a divestment announced today, but we can really deal with contracts. So they were, you know, a lot more focused on higher level materiality than we were focused on. I don't know if that's useful to you.
And they would say that. Kevin,
and you also the way of looking at the system. A lot of the disclosure overloads is stupid disclosure. So auditors make you do sensitivity comparisons. Hello, it's in the actual. You know, that sort of thing should be exempted. In the related party transaction in parent and subsidiary single entity financials, they would eliminate on consolidation. So if there should be an exemption for intergroup related parties, that's a useless of information. But external related parties is fine. And maybe the suggestion is in the critical estimates and judgments, management actually specify their basis of preparation and what materiality they've used. So what's the job? Give an opinion on the financial statements as a whole. So instead of a basic preparation in accordance with IFRS, yes, using this material threshold, quantitative, however management wants to describe it. So now that sets the picture. The users don't like it, they'll put pressure on management, and management can change its materiality threshold. If the users are absolutely accepted, management will push out its materiality threshold. And eventually you will, over time, get to a page where everyone's happy in relation to that particular entity. But at the moment, because no one defines materiality as a basis of preparation, everything's material. And it does appear that the auditors do view that if there's an IFRS standard and you've got a transaction, it's material because of the there is an existing IFRS standard, so we've got to drag everyone's page back to, as Bob wants, the concept of the financial statement taken as a whole. Because that's the opinion is not a note. And so it's reinforcing, and that maybe it's one of the level improvements. We amend 27 IFRS, but it's putting in if the theory is in place as a whole.
Do you think that would help to have materiality?
No one reads I at once. Unfortunately.
So the changes we're making now, and there are a couple of changes that we're putting through I at once beginning next year, and one of them includes a restatement, and I can't remember the exact wording, but it's basically just because something's material on your balance sheet doesn't mean that everything about that item has to be disclosed. You still need to put a materiality threshold. Yeah. Over each individual standard, that's designed to get part of it to address
that. Yeah,
and the thing was also clear the discussion forum had on disclosure, because the auditors are very much willing to be party to this as well and to try and help. But some of the problems with the way the standards are written, and we have a couple of standards as an example where you say that an entity shall disclose, or at the minimum, and it's very hard for an auditor or a preparer or anybody to say, well, it says at a minimum, I kind of think it's a pretty strong word, and then they look at IS1, even though they're aware of it, with the general materiality not out, but the threshold, and say, well, how does a very general statement on IS1 override a very specific statement that deals with animals? And so we had a look at, you know, the Scottish and New Zealand issue, it is where material, I think 453 times or something like that, and we're not sure that that's the right answer. So we have to be very careful about, we're aware of some of these, and we're going to try and chip away at each one of these problems.
Well, even the obvious is IS1, and any other information management field is relevant. And then we answer that from the auditors is always no. Because if I like in a mining industry, our decommissioning or rehabilitation obligations are discounted. And I'm not allowed to disclose by the auditors what my undiscounted number is. My undiscounted number is in the billions. But you've got the liability, it's there. Whereas I think it would be useful information to disclose, you know, a time value in relevant criteria of how numbers are going to pan out over time. But I think it's relevant information, but you know, they can't measure relevant information. As I was telling Darryl this morning, paragraph
69A
of IS1. Management's intention to settle. Well, the auditor can't audit an intention to make default to contractual obligation. The words become difficult for the, not that the management wouldn't want to put it down, it's just to have your audit intention. You can't audit them, and therefore you don't get it. And it's more of those words than, I mean, it is, if the audit's going to be on page, then it's sitting down with them and saying, audit this work, can you audit this work, can you audit this work? When they say no, we'll again begin some more of the process. Can you audit intention?
I know it.
No, I'm talking to Richard. Have you audited intention?
Take the fifth on that.
It's been a public session.
Fast basis.
Okay, Mark, you said, I think you need, or you should need, to disclose intergroup transactions in the entity
which are wholly subsidiary. Because no one's relying on that, it's the group.
Right, are you saying there are no users of those financial statements?
There's no user who's relying, that I'm aware of, on the credit of the sole entity that's going to worry about that they've got transactions up in and out the group. That's an expectation. Of course there'll be management accounts. The users of those of the subsidiary finances are not widely circulated in most jurisdictions and most countries. They are bottom drawer financial statements. Or regulatory. So you know, in an environment where the financial statements are only going to the tax authorities and the bottom drawer. There's nothing there.
I don't disagree with you on that, yes, but you know, in Europe, they're all files, are they not publicly available in South Africa?
Not at.
I mean, that depends on jurisdiction. But
yeah, it is very. Could be jurisdiction. But private company financial statements are not generally available. That's why they're private companies.
But
in our country.
But they
could have. So they have to be mandatory
auditing. Because they're company factors.
Yeah.
When PK made his comment, it seemed like he wanted people to be more direct. So I'll be direct. I think you're wasting your time. there's, in my opinion, little to nothing standard setter can do in this area that's going to significantly improve it. I think you're going to be a lot of harping on it, but I don't see how standard can do much, and you can put it in each standard. Come on, we're all professionals. We should know better anyway. You know, just have to be keeping the standard. It has to do with litigation, especially in the United States, and it has to do with regulatory reprisal. A lot of that in the United States, I think, with SMA too. I think you're wasting your time. I'll be a little flippant and say, you know, your best measure would be if people and companies meet for something more than 20 minutes. 20 minutes or more, it's material. Because we don't have time to talk about non-material stuff. And maybe the one benefit from that is we'll have 19-minute meetings. But anyway, I think you're just wasting your time.
On that basis, Bob, we never have share-based payments because our shareholders have to approve the fee. And therefore, we never discuss them unless you want to change the fee. We don't even get 1 minute, it's not about 20.
I think it'd be a collective effort in this. The ISB is a standard setter, wants to lead that collective effort. I applaud it. I'm not sure that is a party I would point to that should be responsible for leading it. But the ISB, or a standard setter, trying to work within its framework and its standards, they're trying to do something on this. I think they've got more important. I think not more important things, but I think you could do, you can use your resources better. I just don't think it's going to matter.
And do you agree with Kim, or do you have another point?
I have another point, but I do think it would be helpful to clarify, though, that when you use shall or minimum, that doesn't necessarily mean you have to dispose of everything, and you could do that all in one location. I just wanted to follow up on something that Kevin had said about disclosing your materiality thresholds, and I really don't think that would benefit the users. It's a judgment call that you make as you're going through designing your policies and practices, and if you don't have a lot of underlying information about the size of transactions that the companies are generally facing, you may not come to an appropriate conclusion regarding whether or not a certain materiality threshold is appropriate. So I think it would end up resulting in a significant increase in disclosures versus providing additional clarifying information.
I like challenge. Bob's been frank, I'm not going to disagree fundamentally. I think there are it's going to be very difficult for us to do a lot, but I suspect, my personal view is that what we might end up doing is actually acknowledging what we can't do, and also taking away some of the very obvious things. If you've got a standard set at a minimum, that's not very helpful. So I think if you chip away at that and you take away some of the excuses, you might get some behavioural changes. And the feedback came from us and came back to us with maybe we were quite a couple of lines when they said, you know, essentially that if you just make a few little changes, that could be a catalyst and we can then start to work better with the auditors. So I'm not gonna say that we're gonna change financial reports overnight. But we certainly in some cases we don't help by having almost a checklist approach to it. So I still think that back to the point I was making earlier. We talked about the clarity of the objective of the financial report, the clarity of the user. I usually get you for giving the standard itself. If you sat down and try to work out what the objective of the standard is and why particular bits of information are important, then I think I've got a better sense of what might be helpful material to understand what about that thing. So I suspect that we don't do as good a job as we ought to do. Find the objective of the standard and why you think you need sensitivity analysis to get done, and when sensitivity analysis is helpful. So if we get much clearer objectives, then I think hopefully it might give you a little bit more to work with rather than simply, well, I've got to try to look at it because I'm not really quite sure what else you want me to do.
I agree with Alan and Bob that we should not look at this project as a panacea for solving all the disclosure overloads, and we need to acknowledge that this is not a panacea, but all the disclosure overload problems are there. But there are some low-hanging fruits that we can fix them. I think those are relevant low-hanging fruits that can be fixed to show the yet another opportunity to highlight that people need to exercise caution, judgment, and all the other things. And I think that's all we can aim to achieve, because I don't think this is can be solved unless we insert ourselves into every preparer, every auditor's frame of mind, and it's impossible. And I think we got to realize that, and we got to be modest about our achievements, and we should not set expectations too high on this one.
Okay.
I don't think the end result of this can be a way to magically apply materiality like it's never been applied before. I would have always envisaged that this would enable a preparer and an auditor perhaps to have a better discussion about materiality. I think sometimes the initial reactions don't get some pushback, especially at lower levels, and it's a lower level financial reporting person and audit junior had a better discussion, maybe some of these issues might flow further up the financial reporting chain so they get better input. I think also, if we can just do something to build some momentum and to enable those discussions, I think that will be a good outcome from what we do. As I said, we had some members to say that's something that people want us to work on as well, and without sort of going out there and trying to do something, I think we're not sort of giving service to that strong message that we have to see.
I think you definitely have to do something, but we just need to create that problem with the current category.
I think you could ask what the financial statement could be. Either if it's a small book, it should be read quickly, and the principal information should be in, or it should be a dictionary. So a certain information in case users want to read it. And I feel that it keeps between the two states, because this is my thought of meetings we had before with analysts, users, and they say that, in case we need it, we find it.
Yeah.
It's impossible to do it and to make a small book, which will be read very quickly. So I think that on that part, you have to research with them to know what the conversation is.
And they
have to
play Michelin Taxonomy. To some people who can tell us, give us a nice summary financial statement and financial report, but just pop all these data into a box for us so we can analyze it later. And actually, I thought the objective of XBRL was to make that summary easy to access, not to increase the data set. And that's a materiality question as well, if you really believe that this information was popping over the wall from behind the corporate veil, then the materiality threshold should be the same as with an electronic format or a written format. Or you have very clear objectives, which is for information needs. So I think about the same question all about XBRL or taxonomy as it was in great reporting. What's the advantage?
What worries me with such a project, we know the objective, that readers of the financial statements would have made it. Taken a different decision if the information has been provided. And for me, the question is, do we need a very strong guidance on this? Probably there are some cleanup to make of certain standards, as you say. But overall, at the end, it's a question of protection of judgment of the different parties involved, the preparer, the auditor. When we say that, I think we've covered the issue. So I think the more detail, the more guidance we provide, I do not see what real benefit it will bring to just the re-emphasizing of professional judgment of the different parties concerned.
Yep. Are people hearing that we are going to try and develop more detailed guidance? I don't think that's the message we're giving. We're not sitting there, when I grew up, I can't even. Have these thresholds, percentages for things like that. We're not looking at that sort of math. It is a case of trying to understand more about why people are disclosing more, and whether it is clarity objectives, whether some of the wording and the standards and so on. I don't want an expectation that we're going out there to create a little guidebook on how to assess materiality.
Any other thoughts? Do you have any other questions to the group? Any other questions?
Can I just get a broad sense whether people are more saying in old camp, which is maybe not going to do anything, or are people more in let's do something and see anything is most probably anything worthwhile, because it will shift some views, some, can I get a better sense of
You mean raise our hands, maybe?
Yeah, yeah. Something or nothing.
The IAS, we cannot vote on this, so please don't use the vote. it's an unofficial poll, so don't be too hung up on this. But how many of you really think, tilting towards Bob's view? I know
that resources can be used better in other areas.
You want to make a one minute pitch on your
to gather a minority anyway. But no.
So what does it mean? What is the okay? So if Bob, you does not get me. Yeah. So you want to say something?
I vote for him.
Okay, that's three. How many of you are there?
It doesn't matter, but I vote for Bob.
It makes me wonder if people don't like disclosure openly and they want us to do something about it, we're starting to get push the limits of what's possible to do from the IRC perspective, which is good, but it just means that the sort of response or the push to us to address this load is actually going to be very limited.
You probably are on the page where let's push the train and let the others take the lead. But yeah, at the moment, you know, people get caught up in the shower and bring them up.
Not because I'm a standard setter, I'm saying that people tend to see somebody else to solve the problem, but I think the problem lies, in my mind, many a times in the backyard of the preparers and the auditors. Mm-hmm. And so I really think, as to some extent what Bob said, is that our hands are tied. How much can you say? Yes, there are some low-hanging fruits that you need to fix it, but how much can you tell that it's going to clear the air here is a question you need to ask ourselves. All of us, I'm not talking about that standard setters, but all of us need to ask, how much can we do it in this area?
I said maybe if they, in the future, that's the basis of conclusion, you specify why those disclosures were relevant, so that as time evolves, you can say, that's not relevant anymore, it needs to go away. Because I don't understand why you need 5 years history in the IFRS 10. That's beyond me, because now I've been debating with my auditors. Well, if you need 5 years history for 2013, you need 5 years history for 2012, that's comparative. And because we're filing in the US, it would be 2011 as well. So now am I doing history from 2008? Well, no, but, you know, why 5 years? Because we all need to get comparative for the years and on the balance sheet. So here I've got 2 years more, if it doesn't make sense.
Then they have.
On associates, combined balances.
Any other points that no? That looks good. Do you guys got enough to run this? Raska, are you on the line?
I hear that you are leaving Modern Age.